we need a new open for it, because now we have 75 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
You're right. Do you have any ideas for what you would want to say? Do we have a catchphrase?
Do we have a catchphrase? I don't know. Catchphrase? Don't quit.
Welcome back to the Quick Restart Podcast. Once again, I am Terry Foy, joined by Quint Kesnick. And Quint, we are back in the saddle again. Since we last spoke, Air Force upset Duke, Xavier Arline committed to Navy, Chase Scanlon scored 7 goals to lead Syracuse past Colgate, and news broke that number one recruit in the class of 2019, Connor Schellenberger, intends to redshirt this season at Virginia. A lot to discuss, including Scanlon's performance. That being said, you called the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays 15-7 win over Towson with Mark Dixon at Homewood Field, and we'll get to that. But first things first, how you doing?
Doing well. You know, I was lucky to get that week zero game, that Duke Air Force game, because I felt a lot less rusty for week one. And it was wonderful that the weather was nice for the most part in the Northeast, and all these games were played on time and on schedule. And basically everyone has played now except for the Ivies and a couple Northern teams. So we're underway. There's no turning back. We're on the road to Philadelphia, and I couldn't be more excited.
You mentioned the weather was pretty good by and large. I was amazed to see snow in Greensboro, South Carolina, of all places, as Furman took on Hampton. And they played on a snow-covered field. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that'll happen. You know, the key there is to make sure you're using the orange ball for the goalies and make sure some of the lines are clearly defined, especially, obviously, around the midfield line and around the crease.
Well, let's jump into what I think was the biggest game and potentially most meaningful result of Saturday, which was Maryland 14, Richmond 13 in overtime. The Spiders jumped out to a 2-0 lead. Maryland clawed back, and it remained pretty much neck and neck until Richmond built a 12-7 lead early in the fourth quarter. They kind of dominated the second and third periods, at which point, Maryland, first and foremost, played like a team that showed so much experience, so much familiarity with the situation, and a belief that they were going to win. And Richmond was kind of knocked on their heels a little bit for the first 10 minutes of the fourth quarter. I was particularly impressed by midfielder Tate Gallagher, who scored 2 fourth quarter goals, including one that kind of, it seemed like it was going to stem the tide a little bit, stop the bleeding. It gave Richmond a 13-11 advantage, but then it became Jared Bernhardt time, and Logos Wisnoskis, I thought, made the play of the game in overtime to draw a double team and deliver a really nice cross crease pass to Anthony DeMeo for the game winning goal. And Maryland avoided becoming the second team in as many weeks to lose to a SoCon team, the second top 10 team, to suffer that fate. So really, really meaningful result for the Terps as they were coming off of an impressive 23-12 win over High Point in week zero.
I bumped Richmond into my top 20 based on that loss. Turnovers and failed clears really were the story of their last 14 or so minutes of that game. If they handle the ball better, I think they can hold on for the win. But you got to give Maryland credit now. This is a team, you go back to the end of last year with that win over Towson in the first round of the NCAA playoffs when Bernhardt scored with 3.7 to go. They're just finding ways to win. Okay, I like their top group a lot. Wisnoskis, Bernhardt, DeMeo, Fairman. That group is as good as any in the country. My question with them is going to be bench scoring, because you look at this game and they only got 2 points off the bench. And one of those guys was Roman Puglisi. So they're not getting much from that second midfield group. I do think that they've improved their defense. Makar Brett is a better player this year. He's a capable number one. Nick Grill is tremendous on grounders, and they're more solid in the other areas. And I think Chris Brandau fits in as well. So this is a very good team. Showed a lot of courage on the road to come back, eyeing that deficit. And things don't get any easier for the Terps. They've got Penn this week. They still have to play Nova, Navy, Notre Dame, Albany, and Virginia. That's before the Big Ten schedule. So John Tillman has really ramped up their schedule.
There's no question about that. One thing, as you mentioned, turning the attention to that Penn game that I'm going to keep an eye on is the faceoff performance. The Terps finished below 50% against a Richmond team that traditionally has not been that good facing off. And so that's an area of concern. Kind of to the point that you made about offensive depth, I think that Jack Brennan, a freshman midfielder, is a bright spot. So keep an eye on him. And then in addition to that, we haven't seen Kyle Long yet this season. He's struggling with an injury, and I think he's the type of guy, I know I've been really high on him over the course of his career, that many expected to take a leap heading into his junior season and probably find a more meaningful role in that top six.
I completely agree. Remember, he was the guy with the game-winning assist in the Towson game. He made a late push last season. He's a good change of pace, second middie or first middie, where they can get the ball behind the goal and he can create some mismatches off the invert. So his health is worth a goal, two, or maybe even three goals a game for the Terp offense.
Well, let's move on. Another game that was worthy of mention, Virginia 12, Loyola 9. Both teams got their season started in Charlottesville. This one broadcast on the ACC network. And the Cavaliers began their title defense with what I thought was a really sloppy affair. I saw this Virginia team against Towson in a scrimmage a week prior, and they scored off the opening faceoff with Petey LaSala going straight to the goal, and they built a 13-1 halftime lead. In this game against Loyola, in aggregate, they turned the ball over five times. They committed eight penalties, and they built a 9-2 lead with a few, less than a minute to go in the second quarter. A lot of that, I thought, was a function of, it was actually really difficult for me to decide how much of Loyola's struggles offensively were the result of Alex Rode playing really well, and how much of it was a result of them shooting the ball into his stick because they weren't creating good looks. One of those two goals came on extra man as Logan Devereaux opened it up. In the second half, they finished 3 of 5 on extra man. So, a meaningful percentage of their goals came off of that situation. But it was more than that. The ball movement picked up a little bit. They were getting stops defensively. And if I'm Loyola, despite losing this game, there's a lot to be encouraged by. On the flip side, if I'm Virginia, your offense showed early what it's going to be capable of. I think a lot of folks have been really excited about the idea of Peyton Cormier's addition to this group because he represents something that's very different from what, Ian Laviano and Michael Krause and Matt Moore and Dax Aiken represent and provided to this team over the course of, certainly last season and the expectations heading into this year. And I think he saw that early on against Loyola. He was dangerous in the two-man game. He demonstrated some mid-range shooting, and he was really physical with the ball in his stick. But in the second half, I thought it was particularly notable that Loyola switched to a zone defense, and from that point on, Virginia, I believe, only scored two more times. And whether that was a function of the way that the game had unfolded and they had this big lead, they were probably trying to work clock a little bit more in order to ensure the outcome, or if it was a function of the fact that maybe this early in the season they don't necessarily have their full zone offense package in. I think there's a little, it bears watching what Virginia is going to look like offensively over the course of the next couple weeks.
Yeah, we saw Johns Hopkins struggle against the zone. That's a typical early season issue that teams have. Just the amount of practice time in the month of January, you're trying to pick personnel, you're trying to install your base offense, and then you've also got to spend time in practice with zone offense and man up. And transition. There's just a lot there. And typically zone offense is overlooked a little early in the season. There's no doubt about it in my eyes, Terry, that Virginia is loaded on offense. When they're taking the number one recruit in the country, Connor Schellenberger, and redshirting him, that tells me that they feel exceptionally well about their first line middies and their first attack. And I think what you'll see this team grow is that offensive depth. Now, I worry about the defense. I worry about role players on defense, shorties other than Fox, who's a very good player. Because when you think about what Rode did, he picked up where he left off. I mean, he's coming off the two best games of his career, the finals and then this game. 10 saves in the first quarter. Loyola shot only 3 of 28 in the first half. Okay, that's bad. Opportunity was there early in the game. They didn't take it.
So in addition to some personnel transition that is, you know, obviously going to happen by virtue of graduation. Virginia also playing without Cade Sostad. His return, recovering from an injury, is unclear. I think there's hope that he'll be back in time for Princeton. Worth noting at the on the other end of the field, Loyola playing defensively without John Raley and Matt Hughes. Hughes missed last season after transferring in from Mercer, I believe, with a torn ACL that he's still recovering from. The hope is that both of those will be able to return in short order.
That was big for me because I texted Cotter, and I think Loyola's defense is going to be quite good this year. But the fact that Raley and Hughes both didn't play is that's significant. I mean, those guys are really good players. I like McNulty, and obviously Cam Wires is a good player. I think Loyola will grow from the experience. I'd rate them a slight favorite over Johns Hopkins this weekend. We can talk about that later. But my question marks with Loyola are going to be from the midfield, though, you know, in terms of drawing double teams, drawing slides, who can score unassisted goals, who are going to be guys with the ball in their sticks that are going to be threats to get that offense going, to get Lindley and Olmstead some opportunities, whether it's those guys dodging off the ball movement or those guys catching and shooting. So that's my question mark. I think Loyola is going to have good transition. I think Sam Schaefer debuted. He looks solid. My question mark is midfield scoring.
I want to comment specifically on Sam Schaefer. He was slow starting early, particularly as Virginia built that lead, but finished the game with 15 saves, a solid 60% outing for sure. And this was something that was noted coming into the game. I thought Ed Lee did a nice job talking about the transition from Jacob Stover, a multi-year starter, I believe actually a four-year starter, to Schaefer. He particularly called out Schaefer's ability in the passing outlet game. And I thought that, you know, his ability to throw really accurate 50-yard passes helped with Loyola in their clearing game. They cleared at 90%, 18 of 20. And, you know, as someone who wrote a cover story for the February issue of Inside the Cross about how daunting Virginia's ride was, it was notable that they weren't able to create turnovers against a really inexperienced team that defensively was missing some of its starters. The other comment relative to Loyola's offense that I wanted to share was 2 weeks ago, I attended the Delaware Navy scrimmage, and my biggest takeaway from that was how similar, by and large, Navy's offensive personnel looks to each other. Basically, look, you got six very similar-looking guys out on the field, and so talking to Joe Amplo afterwards, he was very blunt, and he said, "We don't have an alpha male offensively." And I think everybody understood that transitioning from a Pat Spencer offense to a non-Pat Spencer offense was going to yield Loyola's struggles relative to that notion of having an alpha male offensively. Now, I do think that Aiden Olmstead is a very good dodger, and he is a, you know, kind of half assist, half goal type of attackman. So the idea of him transitioning into the quarterback role in the near term is very logical, but I agree with you that they're going to have to develop an alpha male offensively, particularly from a physicality standpoint. I think there are a couple of guys on this team that have the potential to do that, and I think Jack Decker, the sophomore transfer from Marist, is the one that the staff is most excited about, but there's no question that there are a lot of unproven quantities. Right now, you see a guy like Peter Swindell with the most experience being the one that they're going to rely on. And I think that going forward, they're going to have to see some new faces emerge in order to make sure that the known quantities like Lindley and like Olmstead don't just get totally overwrought relative to defensive attention.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think Charlie is really good. Obviously, Mark Van Arsdale has been around the block 27 times. Transition offense, always a signature. I think they'll go in that direction. I also think you'll see kind of a matchup based, though, where they'll have to force defenses to switch and then try to create some favorable dodging scenarios. I don't think there's an alpha on that roster. I don't think they have a guy that they can roll out there like a Romar Dennis and run him downhill, knowing every time that he's going to draw the double team, or a Pat Spencer. They don't have that personnel. They're going to have to get a little more creative.
Let's talk about a game that did feature an alpha offensively, and that was the game that you called, Johns Hopkins 15, Towson 7. Cole Williams, 3 goals and 4 assists, and there's no question that physically he is a matchup problem. This was a game that was a little bit misrepresented by the final score, in my opinion, just on the basis of the fact that at one point it was tied 6-6, and then obviously the Blue Jays exploded and scored 9 of the game's next 10 goals. What did you see in terms of your vantage point for the press box?
I thought Cole played okay in the first half, and then there was a point where I kind of thought he was kind of disappearing early third quarter, and then next thing I know, he assisted on like four straight goals, and he had 7 points. He played a remarkable game because he showcased a little bit of everything, whether it was a ground ball play, making the right pass in transition, beating his man one-on-one, or really showing more of an affinity to pass. Last year, he had 19 assists, and that's a good sign. Without Joey Epstein in the lineup and a lot of new young faces around him, his ability to distribute the ball, to see over the defense, to be comfortable with a guy on his gloves and find open men, I thought was new and encouraging for him. You know, my whole point about this Hopkins team going into this game was, you know, it's about growth, it's about development, it's about getting better, because they have a lot of similar type players who need to step up and who need to get better. And there were some bright spots. When you look at that game, there were certainly a lot of individual bright spots from some previously no-name players.
Let's shift our focus to Towson, and I want to come back to the Blue Jays in a second, but I also want to make sure that, you know, it's clear this is a Tiger team who you mentioned suffered a really disappointing first-round tournament loss at home against Maryland last season, and they were always going to be in flux. The graduation of Alex Woodall was going to leave a gaping hole at the faceoff X, but it was more than that. Certainly offensively, Brennan Sunday was their trigger man, and at the defensive end, Zach Grudrich is one of the most physically imposing short stick D-middies we've seen in recent memory. That being said, they're guys that they anticipate relying on this year even still have kind of bizarre situations. Brody McLean, who is a former transfer, was a late decision heading into this game with an injury. John Mazza played. It was the first game that he had played since the 2018 season. Austin Stewart, a Denver transfer, has yet been cleared to play. And Grant Maloof, they knew, was going to have to sit out on terms of his redshirt. So, you know, these are four guys that are relatively known quantities, in addition to the fact that you had a guy like James Avanzado making his first appearance after transferring in from Maryland. So my point is that there was so much fluctuation and kind of upheaval before you even get to the fact that longtime assistant Anthony Gilardi left to become the head coach at Stony Brook in the offseason. I guess with all that being said, were you impressed by the Tigers, or do you just think that the path to become the team that they've been the last, say, 6-7 years is just a really long one?
No, it was hard to be impressed by them. I think their future, I think down the road in the month of March and April, they'll become a team that can compete for the CAA. Right now, quite honestly, it was pretty ugly. You know, you mentioned the question marks. When Grant Maloof was a scratch because of an NCAA issue for him to get this year, he had to sit out one game. You look at their roster and you're like, well, how are they going to score? You know, he had 24 goals last year. And at that stage, it's like, ooh, this is going to be dicey. The good news was that McLean played and looked healthy. But offensively, man, they got about nine guys that they're considering. And I just didn't sense any continuity. And in talking to their coaching staff, it really sounded like the preseason's been a struggle between, as you said, between health and eligibility issues and having the same guys at practice and able to go and, you know, role definition. So I expect Towson to improve dramatically over the course of the first three games. But if you're Johns Hopkins, I wouldn't put too much stock into that defensive performance. You know, Towson just does not have the same type of offensive talent as a Loyola will.
So one more thing on Towson before shifting gears back to the Blue Jays. Kobe Smith is a star, and his transition prowess, long pole bringing the ball up the field, took a step forward on national television. What was your takeaway from him?
I thought it was unbelievable. You know, he's got great speed and amazing off the ground this year. It looks like his hands were even better. The one thing that stands out to me was the way he flowed upfield. Often he wasn't the ball carrier and he was on the weak side of the field. And so many defenders don't push that rush. He reminded me of an offensive minded hockey defenseman who's going to skate up the ice on the weak side where the puck is and fill the seam and be the fifth guy down or be the fourth guy down and capitalize on a bad substitution. And so many of his runs, typically guys would not cross the midfield line, but he sensed that, hey, if Hopkins is subbing, we got numbers. I mean, two goals, two assists. He put on a show. It was something special, and he made his presence felt. I thought it was one of the stronger offensive-minded defensive player performances that I've ever seen. And it'll be interesting to see how Towson uses him, because I think you got to put him up in the wing of faceoffs. McNallen and Joey Chestnut were struggling to win draws. They put Garrett Zangalia up there. But if Kobe Smith's your best ground ball guy, he's got to be on the wing. And he's going to log a lot of miles, but that's going to play to his strengths.
So like I mentioned, I want to ask a couple more direct questions about the Blue Jays. And I want to start with the midfield scoring, because that had been something that was a bit of an issue over the course of the last couple of years. And certainly, you know, I think Connor DeSimone's performance as a three-goal outing, Evan Zinn with 2-1, and Garrett Degnan with 3 goals as well. Those were really impressive showings for a group that had been a little bit maligned in recent years. What was your impression or takeaway from that performance?
Well, here's the deal. When Towson started the game in man-to-man with no Joey Epstein, they failed to pull Zinn. And Zinn ran by the shorty and scored. He ran by the shorty and fed Cole Williams for a goal. It was just too easy. And that was mind-boggling matchups. They got the pole on the wrong guy. Then Towson goes to zone, and Zinn disappears. And the passers and the shooters are put into play. And that's where Degnan did his damage. He's got a Patrick Frazier-like release. Not the same velocity, but he's a tall lefty out of the mouth. He's a sophomore now. Played some midfield last year. Really went to work in terms of changing his body, his footwork. Long release, but he can rip it. He can shoot it. And so he was effective against the zone. You know, they had some, you know, Kincannon got banged up in the game. He didn't finish the game. Knee, but he was standing, walking around, no ice, no crutches. So we'll see about him going forward. They got a lot of Smurfy guys who can handle the ball. I'll tell you that much. Owen Murphy looked good as a freshman. He's a playmaker, a righty, and Brett Baskin is certainly confident. And then DeSimone, 16 goals as a freshman, only 4 last year. He looked like himself. He looked like he should, and he's on his way to a 20 goal season, like a 20-20 type year as a first middie.
What can you say about Joey Epstein, who did not play and did warm up?
Yeah, day to day. He warmed up. There was some talk about him playing extra man. He didn't. He still had a pretty bulky brace on. I think it's a I would probably expect to see him against Loyola in a limited capacity. But this was a positive for Hopkins to operate without him. They played a lot of people, too, which is, at times Dave Petromala has not played as many as I'd like to see. In this game in particular, the rotation, the middies went six deep. They played, I think, 4 close defenders. They played 2 poles. They played 4 shorties. And that's where we talk about, Terry, the shot clock. If you're relying on one faceoff man, look at Ohio State. Justin Inacio didn't play. They got dusted by Boston College and Boston U in the faceoff department. They got 2 guys, Prouty and Naruski. They've got 4 shorties now. So Matt Hubler gets a break. You're getting to see Jake Lilly, the tall sophomore, DePietro, Eddie Glassmeyer, the freshman. And I think that's so important for teams right now, to have a stable of 4 shorties, 2 Fogos, 2 poles, because teams are playing more games, and these games have more possessions. It's a different game, and you have to coach and build your roster accordingly.
Shifting gears to Friday night, the Syracuse Orange beat the Colgate Raiders 21-14. It was the debut of Chase Scanlon, the Loyola transfer who topped 50 points last year and garnered the number 22 jersey, brought it out of retirement. It had been in the closet for 2 seasons. He put up 7 goals in his debut. The Raiders, who had lost really just resoundingly to North Carolina the week prior, put up 14 goals against the Syracuse defense that, with Drake Porter, Nick Mellon, who also left the game due to injury, was probably going to be pretty reputed, but certainly it was the Orange offense that told the story of the day. Scanlon showing so much of his prowess as a feet-set right-handed shooter, which was a familiar role, particularly at the end of the year for the Greyhounds last season. Jamie Stromboli, 4 goals. Steven Rafis, 1 goal and 7 assists. Outrageous performance for him. Lucas Quinn, 3 goals and an assist, and then a peppering of scoring among some of the other better-known or well-known players, including Tucker Dordovic, who had an assist and was making his return after missing last season due to injury.
It's a great offense, and I think Pat March is going to thrive there with this group. They got a lot of different options. They have a lot of multi-skill sets, downhill guys like Curry, They got Dordovic. They got the wing player in Scanlon. They got, you know, shake and bake type guys like Lucas Quinn, Cook. There's a lot there. And so I see Cuse being a really dangerous offensive team this year. A little concerning. I know it's week one. You give up 14 to Colgate. You got to go back and make your adjustments. So I a team that will improve quite a bit from week one to week two defensively, but that's not a good start. I think they can sort things out. They got Binghamton this week and then Army coming in on the 23rd.
A couple of notable results around the rest of Division I lacrosse, and you can react as needed. Army 17, UMass 4. This was a game that the Black Knights won 12-11 last year. A 7-point performance out of Brendan Nickturn. Duke 17, High Point 8. A meaningful bounce back game for the Blue Devils after losing to Air Force in their opener. Penn State 19, Villanova 10. Another record setting performance for Grant Ament. Denver 13, Air Force 7. J.J. Silstrup had five goals on five shots in his debut for the Pioneers.
First of all, Army, wow, unbelievable win in a game typically that's been like 9-8, 10-9, 11, you know, one-goal games in the middle scoring range to lead 9-0 at halftime. That is special. Nickturn continues to play great. Duke made some changes on defense. Take a look at that one. I haven't looked at the highlights yet, but there's some personnel changes on D. They made a goalie change midway through the first half. I like Duke's offense, and I think Duke. Everyone's talking about the lack of an X-man, attackman. Well, that is what it is with Robertson out. But I think there's enough there to score goals this year. My question mark is defensively. They're young, they're inexperienced. I don't love their shorties. And that remains kind of a focal point. And you saw some personnel changes in that win over High Point that kind of caught my attention. Tough game next. Duke travels to Denver, and that's always a great game. Two of the best coaches in the game, the history of the game, with Tierney going squaring off against Donowski. It's Levittown against East Meadow.
And certainly the Pioneers coming off of a 13-7 win over Air Force. That was a game played in Colorado Springs, which is always a tough trip and has been a little bit of a treacherous one for the Pios. So I'm particularly interested to see they are playing so many young guys all over the field and particularly offensively playing without Colin Squires in their opening game. I thought that was really an impressive showing, particularly because Air Force had just continued to take so many punches from Duke and bounce back in that game 2 weeks ago.
Air Force hung tight. Braden Host was outstanding between the pipes. Those highlights look pretty cool. It was a sunny day in Colorado Springs, but the field is just surrounded by an avalanche of snow. You know, the other game that caught my attention, Terry, was the Ohio State game against BU and the fact that Ohio State really didn't win any faceoffs. But they dug in and their goalie, Josh Kirsten was terrific. And he was the difference maker. He made 18 stops and they only gave up four goals. That's a game where you look at it and you're like, you know what? Pre-shot clock, they may have lost that game because BU would have been able to hold the ball. They wouldn't have had to take those shots. And Ohio State's possessions would have been limited to the point where maybe they were upset. So we talk about the shot clock. Everyone thinks it helps offenses, but it can be helpful for a defense if you're not winning faceoffs.
I look at that and I see that game from the opposite angle, which is Boston University now 0-2 with a 12-5 opening season loss to Providence. And as you mentioned, that 11-4 loss to Ohio State. And I see a Terrier team that only put up 9 goals in 2 games. The transfer of Chris Gray hitting them, unsurprisingly, very hard.
Absolutely.
So as we turn our attention forward, a relatively light week of midweek games. We've got Army taking on NJIT on Monday afternoon, Bellarmine hosting Hampton, and Stony Brook hosting St. John's on Tuesday. And then we're in the weekend as Richmond hosts Marist in the lone game on Friday. As you mentioned, turning our attention to next Saturday, Penn Maryland is for me probably that's the money game. That's the one that everyone's going to have their eye on. But a couple other good ones, including Yale Villanova, the Wildcats coming off of that 9-goal loss to Penn State, and as you mentioned, Duke Denver, Johns Hopkins Loyola. It's going to be a good weekend, Quint. I can't wait to talk to you next time, as we will not only have some of these meaningful results, but also first-time looks at Notre Dame, Albany, who takes on Cornell. It's going to be an exciting weekend. That's the one I was going to mention. Yeah.
I was going to mention that one. Albany hasn't debuted yet, and neither has Cornell. Ivy League in action this coming Saturday. I'm heading down to Chapel Hill. I got Lafayette at North Carolina. Lafayette, I don't know who's in their scheduling department. Man, they've started the season really, really tough fashion. But I'm eager to see Chris Gray and get behind the scenes on Friday with Joe Bresci and the Tar Heels. That's a noon game ACC network on Saturday. But should be a great week, and you hope to see improvement. You know, that's week one to week two. These teams should clean things up. Clearing game should be better. Your rules and your slide packages on defense tighter. You're installing things on both sides of the field, and you hope that the guys on your bench continue to grow.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Quick Restart Podcast. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, leave a rating and review. Hit us up on social media at @inside_lacrosse on Twitter, at @inside_lacrosse on Instagram. He is at Q Kesnick. I am at Terrence Foy. And we will be back next week to recap all of the weekend's actions. In the meantime, make sure to check out both the Division III podcast on Wednesday, as well as the return of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast to get you ready for next weekend.
We are whistle ready at the Quick Restart Podcast. Like that? Whistle ready.